And today's edition has Mark Toohey in for Scott MacArthur. And we have Karen Stintz, former city councillor and TTC chair, now the president and chief executive officer of Variety Village, joining us once again. And Kemma Joseph is back. She's a bilingual government relations consultant with Crestview Strategy. Hello to you both.
Hello.
I think we're still getting Karen Stintz on the line, but maybe we start with Kemma Joseph, because, man, we have been talking about things all day. Evan Solomon had an exclusive interview this afternoon with the chief of the Ottawa police, who said well, let's listen to what he said. The question here is the government lying to us? Evan Solomon asked Police Chief Steve Bell whether the Emergencies Act was fully sort of requested by the police.
You know that there's a big controversy around the invocation of the Emergencies Act. Chief Slowly, who was the chief during that before he stepped down and you took over as interim chief, said he did not request the government to utilize the Emergencies Act. We're trying to figure that out. I don't know if you can comment on that, but interim chief, like, did the Ottawa police, did they need the powers of the Emergencies Act? Were there a request for more powers in some form? How did that work?
So that's one of the things the inquiry is going to look at, and I think it's really important, because beyond the need for the Emergencies Act, and as the chief that actually executed the authorities around that, I think it was absolutely needed to end that protest.
So that's as good a non-answer as I've ever heard. Later on in the interview, he does say that they discussed it and that it was the Emergencies Act provided important tools that they wouldn't otherwise have had. The Conservatives say the government is lying. Well, here's the government.
We invoked the Emergencies Act after we received advice from law enforcement. It was only after we got advice from law enforcement that we invoked the Emergencies Act. And it was only after police told us that they needed this special power.
The advice that we were getting was that that law enforcement needed the Emergencies Act.
And it goes on and on like that. I say the government, at the very least, was trying to make us believe that the police asked for this, and that's why they acted, to cover their own butts. Kemma, what do you say?
I think the word lying is a very strong word. I do agree with what you're saying in terms of, it seems like they were trying to share the responsibility of the decision with the police, and the police, I'm assuming for technical reasons, can't really take, can't tell the government what to do. And so hence the technicalities around them saying, well, we didn't tell them to do it, but yes, we did it. So this is a weird dance that the government is doing with the police. And I think the opposition is, of course, tapping into it as a way to create perhaps a wedge issue with the government, and also to try to distance themselves from having spoken to a lot of the protesters or the those who attended the convoy. So I think that the government is trying to, again, share the decision with the police, but we heard it from the chief. It was required, and you can ask anyone in Ottawa, and they will say that it doesn't matter that the government just followed the advice and wasn't told by the police. They're just happy that the convoys ended up, was able to be removed from the streets finally after 3 weeks of taking hold of the city.
Now, Ottawa's interim police chief, Steve Bell, telling Evan Solomon today on the iHeartRadio network that the Emergencies Act was needed and necessary, but the police didn't specifically request it. Karen Stintz is part of our Smart Speaker series. Your thoughts on this, Karen? Should we be criticizing the dance between the government and the police?
I do think that the government needs to be more forthcoming with how the decision was made to invoke the Emergencies Act. And originally the minister got himself in trouble because he said that the police requested it. And then both the police and the RCMP were put in the position where they had to clarify that they didn't ask for the act to be invoked. And, you know, we saw as well that the border issues were resolved without the Emergencies Act. So I think, you know, it was a political move. And even if the government comes out and says, you know what, it was a political move because we felt pressure and the police weren't clearing the Capitol and we were worried that it was going to continue on, even if they could just be forthcoming about that, I think it would go a long way towards what the public needs in terms of having faith in the government that they didn't overreach. And I do think that it is a dance right now. And I think, the police are walking this fine line in Ottawa because they don't want to call the government out. But the reality is that they never asked for the act.
Yeah, I know how that dance works, and I know that they wouldn't have, and they couldn't have, and they didn't. But it seems still to me like the government is trying to pull a fast one by saying, "Oh no, it wasn't us; it was them." Kemah Joseph, we spoke earlier in the program with Liberal Member of Parliament Anthony Housefather about this ongoing and brewing scandal involving Hockey Canada. The members of Parliament at committee now are into this, and it sounds like Hockey Canada may have jumped the gun when it settled a sexual assault claim that was made against some hockey players. Hockey Canada says they don't even know who the players were, but they settled out of court anyway.
It was incredibly disappointing to learn that Hockey Canada settled a lawsuit within less than a month of it being filed, not only on its own behalf, but on the behalf of eight unknown players that are identified in the lawsuit as John Doe, who allegedly committed horrific acts of sexual assault against a young woman in London in 2018. And they settled it, allegedly, according to them, without actually knowing what the facts of the case were, having had an incomplete investigation, which didn't require the players who were present to actually speak to Hockey Canada's independent investigators. So you ask the question, who settles a lawsuit without being aware of all the facts involved and without wanting to get to the bottom of all of the facts involved when the lawsuit is for over $3 million? It's a very weird set of facts, and I think we had a lot of questions about that.
Kemah Joseph, some of this is politics, and I understand how you can't really compel someone to give testimony against themselves, but shouldn't Hockey Canada, as stewards of public funds, have at least wanted to know which of their players might have been alleged to be a sexual predator?
Absolutely, and I would also even question if they actually don't. I'm very confused to how they don't know who these players are. That, to me, it seems like they know who these players are and are actually wanting to perhaps hide their identity because they're now most likely NHL players and maybe create a cascade effect for the broader hockey world. But it's absolutely disheartening and disappointing to see that Hockey Canada is playing this kind of game.
Yeah, Karen, is it fair to assume here, based on what TSN's Rick Westhead's reporting, that Hockey Canada's protecting these players?
Well, that's certainly, from my vantage point, how it looks. And if it's not the case, then Hockey Canada needs to come out with something to suggest that that's not the case. But for anyone that's observing this or learning about this, the impression is that Hockey Canada knows more than they're letting on. And whatever they know, they don't want to get out. And whatever they know is damaging enough to settle for $3 million. And the real disappointing aspect of it is if it all gets brushed under the rug and they think that this is going to go away, when really there's something more systemic that needs to be investigated, because it doesn't, nothing about this makes any kind of sense.
And it is systemic, isn't it? When we think about hockey culture, we just based on Rick Westhead, one sports journalist, exposing the cracks in hockey and the hockey culture. I just wonder if it's going to make a difference. Kemah?
I don't think so. It seems like it's just perpetuating misogyny within hockey. I find it to be very troubling. I think it also dissuades any potential women who have been abused by possibly other hockey players or within the NHL, OHL. So I don't think this is doing any help for sexually abused victims.
On a day that we learned that Edward Lake, the father of three children killed by a drunk driver, Marco Muzzo, has himself died by suicide, we hear that nurses once again are calling for the removal of the Muzzo family name from Ontario hospitals. We'll put that question to our smart speakers when we return. They are Kemah Joseph, a bilingual government relations consultant with Crestview Strategy, and Karen Stintz, former Toronto City Councillor and TTC Chair, now the President and CEO of Variety Village.
And
are you okay? You're going to be fine?
Mark Dewey is keeping me on my toes here, friends. And there is a lot going on the Rush on News Talk 1010 Toronto. We are keeping our eyes on these exploding propane tanks in Rexdale. Right now, there is one business, an equipment rental business, where propane tanks are exploding. We heard from Toronto Police Constable Alex Lee saying Thankfully, nobody has been injured, but this explosion happened at around 3:40 this afternoon, and it is continuing. It's a 3-alarm fire, and there are many firefighters and trucks on scene.
I'm going to go out on a limb here, Rashmi, and say that the fire has something to do with the exploding propane tanks. Just a guess.
You're connecting the
two
already.
But as a professional observer, I would say that seems to make sense to me. We are in the midst of our smart speaker segment, our smart speakers today. Karen Stintz, former city councillor and chair of the Toronto Transit Commission, now president and CEO of Variety Village, and Kemma Joseph, a bilingual government relations consultant with Crestview Strategy. Let's start with Karen Stintz. We learned today that the father of the three Neville Lake children who were killed in that horrific drunk driver-caused collision where Marco Musso returned from a trip overseas, got behind the wheel of a car, as he fully admitted, and drove under the influence, struck a minivan carrying three children and their grandfather, all killed basically on impact. Marco Musso didn't put up a defense particularly, but he walked free on full parole in early 2021. Now, the news that the father, Edward Lake, committed suicide, and once again a renewed call by nurses at some hospitals in Vaughan, would like the Musso family name to be removed from the buildings. These are the DeGasperos Musso Tower at Mackenzie Vaughan Hospital, named in recognition of a massive $50 million donation to the Mackenzie Health Foundation in 2017. Are the nurses right? Should the family name come down?
Yeah, this is so wretched. It's just an awful, awful situation. But in this case, I'm going to agree with the nurses, and that really the Musso family should take the initiative to have the name removed. And, you know, I know that Marco Musso was convicted. He served his time. But the devastation that was caused, and now the recent suicide of the father, I think just demonstrate how deep the pain was of this tragic, tragic accident, and that really, it's so unfortunate, but I think the Musso's really should take the initiative and have the name removed.
Kemi, your thoughts on this?
I agree. I don't think that the family should be waiting for, or the Musso's rather should be waiting for petitions and nurses to ask for the names to be removed. They should be doing, like Karen said, out of their own initiative and maybe rename it to I don't know, the children or the father. But yeah, I'm absolutely, my heart goes out to them. This is absolutely terrible. And also it's a demonstration of the discrepancy that it happens within, or lack of accountability for some within society who have the wealth and power to just walk away free.
Yeah, I'm kind of, I was initially torn on this because the donation was made in good faith by the family. The family's much bigger than this one miscreant son. But at the same time, the value of philanthropy is in helping people and making the donation. It shouldn't be about the ego of having the family name on a tower.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can make that donation without putting your name on it, and people do
and
that.
And a lot of people do that all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. So it seems now that it's just a blatant rewriting of the family name's history if they can make that effort. But would it be valuable to hear from Marco Musso? Do we want to hear from this guy now? What do you think about that, Kemma?
My first thought was no. I don't want to. I don't know what is there for him to say, really, besides, you know, apologizing and saying how sorry he is.
Yeah. I wonder if the family would want the tower named after the children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a great idea by Kemma, that you take the Musso family's money and you honor the victims of Marco Musso.
Yeah, I think that would be much more appropriate. And then in terms of hearing what Marco Musso has to say, I don't really think there's anything that he can say. And, you know, he certainly wasn't responsible for the donation. So the decision isn't his. It really does rest with the family. And I do think the family, they have to do something. They can't just duck and hope this issue goes away. I really think they do need to do something to protect their own legacy.
I agree.
A freelance journalist is upset that Emma Thompson, described by the journalist, skinny actor, has been cast and is appearing as Miss Trunchbull in a remake of Matilda. Emma Thompson is the actor, and the writer Emmy Harrison-West, a freelance journalist with Metro in the UK, says that this basically disenfranchises, actors of size, and that we don't need another skinny actor in a fat suit. Karen Stintz, what do you say on this one?
I don't mean to laugh, but honestly, like, at some point, you just have to draw the line and say, listen, if you want the actor who can do the job, but the issue is the costume, it's certainly not the first time you've had actors in costume to perform a role. And so if you want to take offense, you know, there's a thousand things in every day that you can take offense of. I honestly don't think this should be one of them. And because it's not like they tried to recreate the character as skinny. I think that would be more offensive. I think, you know, the character is the character, and the actor is the actor. And part of playing the role means putting on a costume, and I think it's all completely legitimate.
It is fascinating. Mark and I have been discussing this off air since we started discussing it on air today. This freelancer is saying seeing slim actresses in fat suits hurts. It's fat phobic. Kama, do you agree?
Yeah, well, I pause because I wouldn't consider myself to be plus size, so I don't want to speak on if it's fat phobic or not. I'm assuming that the columnist is a plus size person. I do agree with her general point of the lack of representation within Hollywood. I think her issue is with the fact that Emma Thompson has to don a fat suit to play a quote unquote fat person. And we saw this also with Zoe Saldana, who had to darken her skin, put on a fake nose to play Nina Simone, when they could have easily just casted a darker skinned Black person. So I think she's pointing at, perhaps in a very clumsy way, she's pointing at a bigger issue within Hollywood, in the film industry across the world, of casting someone who is not actually representative of the character in the movie. When there are plus size, I think they're all plus size actors who could have easily played this role. I think that's also what she's pointing at.
Yeah, it is a slippery slope. I don't know if we'll ever come to a conclusion as society, because Tom Hanks recently said he would have preferred a gay actor to play the role of the lawyer in Philadelphia who had HIV. Mm-hmm. But then I would think that are you only going to cast gay actors?
He's wearing a fat suit in his new movie playing Colonel Tom Parker in the Elvis biopic.
Right, there you go. So there's progress in some places, but not because I don't want gay actors to only be cast in gay roles. A gay actor should be able to play a straight person. So,
absolutely, because that's acting.
Yeah, so then a straight person can play a gay person?
Right? It's acting. That's what actors do. They assume the persona and the role of their character. And that's why when they do it really well that they get awards for being that great actor. I mean, if everyone just went and played themselves, we wouldn't be watching movies. We'd just be watching, you know, our videos.
Wait a minute.
Reality TV.
Is Johnny Depp not really a pirate?
It's acting. It's acting. Karen Stintz with the mic drop. We appreciate you both so much. Thank you, Karen. Thank you, Kama.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Kama Joseph and Karen Stintz are our smart speakers on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon, the first day of summer.